Hey everyone, and welcome back. Today we're diving into something really fascinating, I think, tirthas in India.
Ah, tirthas.
And you know, first glance, it might just sound like river crossings, but trust me, we're going way deeper than that.
Yeah.
We were talking about those places where the physical world, like the actual river and the sacred, the spiritual, kind of blur together.
So these thresholds, you know,
yeah.
Those things you read about in like fantasy novels, where you're stepping out of the ordinary world and into like a realm of magic or wonder. But in this case, it's the sacred.
I like that, yeah, like a portal.
Yeah.
So, okay, we're in India. Rivers like the Ganga, obviously huge spiritual importance.
Huh?
How does a simple ford, just a place to cross a river, become a tirtha? Like, how does it get imbued with that deep religious meaning?
Well, you've got, like, a captivating blend of elements all coming together. Mythology is a big one. If you think about the Ramayana, for example, it's said that Lord Rama himself performed rites for his father at a ford in Ujjain. And that act transformed the site. And, you know, eventually it led to the establishment of a Shiva Linga there, and it became this renowned Jyotirlinga.
Ah, Jyotirlinga.
Yeah.
Now, for listeners who might not be familiar, those are sites believed to house a manifestation of Shiva's infinite light. Mm-hmm. So a place where, like, a divine figure actually performed a ritual.
Right.
It becomes sacred ground.
Right. It's like this ripple effect.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Emanating from that act. And then you've got the inherent power that water itself holds in Hindu belief. Water is a purifier. It's a way to connect with the divine. It washes away karma and facilitates rebirth. So a river crossing, where you're physically interacting with this element, naturally becomes imbued with like spiritual significance.
It's like the act of crossing itself becomes symbolic, doesn't it?
Exactly.
A cleansing and renewal.
Yeah.
Okay, but what actually drew people to these tirthas? I mean, what were they looking for?
People were drawn to tirthas for all sorts of reasons, right? They might be seeking blessings. They might be wanting to purify themselves before some big life event. They might be performing rites for their ancestors. Or maybe they just wanted to be in a place of spiritual power.
So they were more than just a physical crossing. They were destinations, like pilgrimage sites in their own right.
Precisely.
And speaking of pilgrimages, we can't ignore rivers, especially the Ganga in all of this, the sacred geography of India. But as you mentioned earlier, it wasn't the only river that was considered sacred, right?
Right.
So how did this concept of tirthas, often located along these rivers, become interwoven with this larger practice of pilgrimage? Was it always connected to the Ganga, or did it start locally?
It's really interesting how tirthas acted like spiritual stepping stones. They connect local beliefs and practices to regional and even national pilgrimages. So you can imagine starting with your local tirtha, a place that you've known maybe since childhood, and then gradually expanding your journey, connecting to this wider network of sacred sites.
So it starts with the familiar?
Yes.
And then expands outward. You're connecting your own personal faith to something much larger.
Exactly. And, you know, many rivers in India are considered sacred. You often find tirthas at the confluence of tributaries, adding another layer of symbolism to these places. And imagine approaching a river crossing like this and being met with a towering gopuram.
A gopuram. Can you elaborate on that for our listeners?
Of course. Gopurams are these monumental gateways, often incredibly intricately carved, that mark the entrance to like a temple complex. And they were especially prominent during the Vijayanagara period. So you'd have these towering structures rising up before you, marking a very clear transition into the sacred space of the temple, which, you know, was often connected to the tirtha itself.
Wow. It's like physically stepping into another realm almost.
Yeah.
Like the architecture itself emphasizes how important that crossing over is.
Exactly.
It's more than just a physical journey. It's a spiritual transformation.
Yeah, you've got it. The Vijayanagara rulers, they were masters of architecture. They used these gopurams to actually heighten the experience of the sacred.
So imagine you're a pilgrim, say, in the Vijayanagara period. You've been traveling for weeks, maybe even months, to reach this particular tirtha.
Mm.
And as you approach, you see this immense gopuram rising up in front of you.
It must have been awe-inspiring. Like the architecture itself is preparing you for what you're about to experience.
This idea of local tirthas becoming part of this larger pilgrimage route, it's like weaving together a tapestry of faith across the landscape.
It's a network. It's like a spiritual roadmap, if you will. So you might visit a local Tirtha for your daily rituals or personal reflection, then maybe embark on a regional pilgrimage, connecting several Tirthas along a sacred river, and then one day maybe even undertake that grand pilgrimage to the source of the Ganga itself.
From the personal to the regional to the national, all interconnected through these sacred river crossings.
Yeah.
It's pretty mind-blowing.
And that's just the beginning. What we've discussed so far is really just the foundation for understanding the significance of Tirtha in Indian religious history. There's so much more to uncover, layers upon layers of meaning and practice.
Well, I'm ready to dive deeper. What other fascinating aspects of Tirthas should we explore?
Well, let's take a closer look at the rituals and practices that actually took place at these Tirthas.
Okay.
What were people doing there? And what were they hoping to achieve?
All right, let's get down to the nitty-gritty then. Let's explore the heart of what made Tirthas so vital to the spiritual lives of people in India.
Picture this, okay? You've arrived at a Tirtha. You've been traveling for weeks, maybe even longer.
Yeah.
The air is thick with incense. You hear chanting all around you, and people are immersing themselves in these sacred waters. It's like this multi-sensory experience that just completely transports you.
Wow, yeah, you're not just crossing a river at that point. You're crossing a threshold into, like you said, a totally different state of mind. It must have been like an incredibly powerful experience.
Absolutely, yeah. And the rituals themselves were so diverse. Some were simple, you know, taking a ritual bath, offering flowers to the deity, lighting a lamp. Others were a lot more elaborate, involving specific prayers, mantras, offerings.
So it wasn't just about being in this sacred place. Mm-hmm. It was about actively engaging with the divine, participating in these rituals to connect on a deeper level.
Exactly. And the motivations behind those rituals were just as diverse. Some people were seeking purification, hoping to, you know, wash away karma and negativity.
Right.
Others came seeking blessings for a good harvest, for health, for prosperity. Some were performing rites to honor their ancestors or to seek guidance from the divine.
It's like a spiritual marketplace.
Yeah, yeah.
With something for everyone. And this kind of brings us back to the social dynamics that we touched on earlier. I mean, we've talked about kings and pilgrims, but were there specific Tirthas associated with certain communities or social groups?
That's a great question. And the answer is yes. Just as the rituals varied, you also had different types of Tirthas, and they catered to a wide range of social groups. You might have a Tirtha that was popular with merchants who were looking for blessings for their trade, or another one that was frequented by warriors praying for victory in battle. Some were associated with specific castes, while others attracted people from all walks of life.
So you could have a Tirtha that's like this bustling hub of activity with people from all different backgrounds coming together, but united by their faith and their desire to connect with the sacred.
Yeah, and that's what makes these Tirthas so fascinating from a social perspective. They weren't just places of religious practice. They were social spaces where people from different backgrounds, different castes, different regions would actually interact with each other.
It's like a microcosm of Indian society, all converging on this one sacred spot. But I imagine, given the strict social hierarchies of the time, that those interactions could be pretty complex, maybe even lead to tension.
Oh, absolutely. We're talking about a society with a deeply ingrained caste system. So while Tirthas offered this space for shared religious experience, they also definitely reflected the social realities of the time. There might be tension between different groups vying for access to the most sacred spots within the Tirtha, or maybe disputes over who had the right to perform certain rituals.
It reminds us that even within the realm of the sacred, those social dynamics were always at play, shaping the way people experience these sites. And that brings us to another fascinating layer, contested sacred spaces. We know that India has this long history of religious pluralism, so what happens when multiple religious groups lay claim to the same Tirtha?
That's such an important point. There are so many examples of Tirthas that were sacred to both Hindus and Buddhists,
yeah.
Hindus and Jains, even Hindus, Buddhists, and Muslims. And the ways in which these different groups shared or contested these sacred spaces could vary widely.
So you might have, in some cases, peaceful coexistence with different religious communities sharing the same Tirtha, each performing their own rituals, respecting each other's beliefs.
Exactly. There's definitely instances where we see evidence of shared spaces, temples and shrines dedicated to different deities existing side by side. It speaks to a level of tolerance and understanding between different communities.
But I imagine there were also cases where those shared spaces became like points of contention, with groups vying for control or trying to to assert their dominance.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have historical accounts of disputes over ownership, attempts to convert sites from one faith to another, even instances of violence erupting over control of sacred space. It reminds us that, you know, while religious pluralism has been this defining feature of India's history, it hasn't always been harmonious.
It's a reminder that the sacred, even something as seemingly unifying as a Tirtha, can become entangled with power dynamics, social hierarchies, and religious rivalries.
And it's in those complexities, in those instances of both harmony and conflict, that we can really start to understand the multifaceted nature of Tirthas. They weren't just places of ritual, they were reflections of the social, the cultural, and the religious fabric of India.
We often think of sacred spaces as being somehow removed from those everyday tensions. But the reality is they're often like right at the heart of them. It's in those moments of friction that we can really see the dynamics of belief, identity, power, all at play.
You fit the nail on the head. You know, studying those dynamics helps us understand how the landscape itself becomes a stage where these human dramas are playing out. It's not just about the physical features of the Tirtha. It's about the stories that we tell about them, the rituals that we perform there, and the relationships that we forge in those spaces.
So we've gone from the act of crossing a river to the transformation of this, of a simple ford into this sacred site, to understanding how these Tirthas became woven into the very fabric of Indian society, reflecting its complexities, its beauty, and its challenges.
Yeah, we've explored the idea of Tirthas as both physical and spiritual crossings, as destinations for pilgrims, as social spaces, and even as points of contention. We've seen how they connect these local beliefs to a much wider network of faith, and how they really reflect the diversity and dynamism of Indian culture.
But I feel like we've only scratched the surface. There's still so much more to explore, to delve into, to unpack. Where do we go from here?
Oh, we've focused a lot on Hinduism so far, but what about other faiths that flourished in India? Were there Buddhist or Jain Tirthas? And if so, how did they differ from Hindu Tirthas? What unique beliefs and practices shaped their significance?
That's a great question, and it raises another fascinating point. What happens when multiple faiths lay claim to the same sacred space? How did those interactions play out? Was it always a story of conflict, or were there instances of cooperation and shared reverence?
Those are fantastic questions, and they really highlight the complexities of sacred geography, especially in a land as diverse as India. We often think of religious boundaries as being clear-cut, but the reality is so much more fluid. You see beliefs and practices overlapping, influencing each other. Sometimes they even merge to create something entirely new.
It makes you realize that the landscape itself isn't inherently sacred. It's the meaning we ascribe to it, the stories we tell about it, the rituals we perform there that transform it into something more. And those meanings, they can evolve over time, influenced by different cultures, different beliefs, different experiences. It's a constant process of negotiation, of reshaping our understanding of the sacred in response to the world around us.
Yeah, it's a reminder that these Tirthas, these crossings, they were never static. They were living, breathing places, constantly evolving along with the beliefs and practices of the people who frequented them. And that evolution continues even today as new generations rediscover these sites and imbue them with their own meaning.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into the world of Tirthas, we're not just leaving you with a set of facts.
Mm-hmm.
We're inviting you to continue the journey, to explore further, to question, to ponder those complexities.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the ways in which the sacred manifests in your own life.
What are the places, the rituals, the experiences that hold like a special significance for you? And how do they connect to a larger network of belief, a shared sense of the sacred that transcends individual experience? These are questions worth pondering, and we encourage you to continue exploring, to keep diving deeper into the world around you.
It's really amazing to think about how something, you know, as simple as just crossing a river can hold such a profound meaning and become this focal point for so much cultural and spiritual expression. But like you mentioned, we've been mostly talking about Hindu Tirthas. What about the other faiths that have flourished in India? Like, were there Buddhist or Jain Tirthas?
Absolutely, yeah. India has always been this tapestry of diverse faiths, and each of them has interacted with the landscape in their own unique way. And Buddhism and Jainism, both with, you know, ancient roots in India, they also have their own concepts of sacred geography and pilgrimage.
So would a Buddhist or a Jain Tirtha look different from a Hindu Tirtha? What kind of beliefs and practices shaped their significance?
Mm-hmm. Well, while the specific rituals and the deities might be different, that underlying principle of connecting with the sacred through place, that remains. For Buddhists, tirthas often mark locations that were associated with the life of the Buddha, so places where he was born, where he attained enlightenment, where he preached, where he passed away.
So for Buddhists, it's about retracing the footsteps of the Buddha, kind of immersing yourself in the places that witnessed his spiritual journey, like a physical embodiment of the path to enlightenment.
Exactly, yeah. Imagine like a Buddhist pilgrim visiting Bodh Gaya, the site where the Buddha actually achieved enlightenment. It's not just a historical location. It's a place that's imbued with this powerful energy. It's a place where you can connect with the very essence of the Buddha's teachings.
You can almost like feel the presence of history there, right?
Yeah.
The weight of centuries of devotion in a place like that. It's
Yeah.
no wonder that sites like that become these huge focal points for pilgrimage.
Yeah. And for Jains, tirthas are often associated with the lives of the Tirthkaras. So those are the enlightened beings who guide others toward liberation from the cycle of birth and death. And these sites might be places where a Tirthakara was born, where they attained liberation, or where they, delivered important sermons.
So for both Buddhists and Jains, the concept of Tirtha is tied to these key figures, these spiritual exemplars who embody the path to enlightenment or liberation.
Exactly. And just like Hindu tirthas, Buddhist and Jain tirthas also served as social spaces, places where communities would gather for festivals, for rituals, for teachings. They were centers of learning and spiritual practice, playing a vital role in transmitting these faiths across generations.
But what happens when multiple faiths lay claim to the same sacred space? I mean, India's religious landscape is so interwoven, I can't imagine that those boundaries were always, neat and tidy.
You're absolutely right. India's history is full of examples of shared sacred spaces where different faiths coexisted, sometimes harmoniously, sometimes with, tension and conflict.
It's like those overlapping circles in a Venn diagram.
Yeah.
You have points of convergence where beliefs and practices kind of intersect, and then points of divergence where those differences become more pronounced.
Yeah, that's a great way to visualize it. And the stories of these shared sacred spaces they're really fascinating. Sometimes you see a blending of traditions, different faiths incorporating elements of each other's beliefs or practices. Other times you see attempts to like assert dominance, to claim exclusive ownership of the sacred site.
It really makes you realize that the landscape itself isn't inherently sacred. It's the meaning that we ascribe to it, the stories that we tell about it, that transform it into something more. And those meanings, they can change over time, influenced by different cultures, different beliefs, different experiences.
Yeah, it's a constant process of negotiation, of reshaping our understanding of the sacred in response to the world around us. And that's what makes the study of Tirtha, of sacred geography in general, so fascinating. It's not just about ancient history. It's about understanding how we as humans interact with the landscape, how we make meaning out of place, how we connect to something larger than ourselves.
And those connections can be, complex, layered, even contradictory sometimes. But that's the beauty of it, isn't it? It challenges us to look beyond simple explanations and embrace the richness and diversity of human experience.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up this deep dive into the world of Tirthas, we're not just leaving you with a set of facts or a neat and tidy conclusion. We're inviting you to continue the journey, to explore further, to question those assumptions, to ponder those complexities.
Think about the ways in which the sacred manifests in your own life. What are the places, the rituals, the experiences that hold a special significance for you?
And how do those personal connections relate to this larger network of belief, a shared sense of the sacred that transcends any individual experience? These are questions worth pondering, and we really encourage you to keep exploring, keep diving deeper into the world around you.
That's it for this deep dive into Tirthas, those fascinating intersections of the physical and the sacred. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, keep diving deep.